Florida activists weigh in as the president says he's standing by Saudi Arabia. Good morning and live from Studio 5 on this Thanksgiving Eve. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, we take your calls on President Trump's remarkable statement yesterday about the murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. You can give us a call right now at 549-2937. Then later, celebrity chef Erica Klein. And some holiday music, a preview of what you can enjoy this weekend in the San Marco Square. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, the president said Tuesday he will not take strong action against Saudi Arabia or its crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, for the death and dismemberment of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The White House has been struggling to respond to a widespread belief that the Saudi prince directed the killing of a journalist who lived here in America. At the same time, they are trying to maintain Saudi support for their foreign policy priorities. There's also criticism that the administration and the Trump family itself is perhaps compromised by too cozy personal and business relationships with the Saudis. As Congress now demands an investigation, the president's statement has bolstered a regime that has now admitted to killing one of its critics and also a member of the U.S. media. On the phone now with his thoughts, we welcome Hassan Shibli. He's Chief Executive Director of CARE Florida. That's the Council on American Islamic Relations. Hassan, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And what are your thoughts about the president's statement yesterday about Saudi Arabia? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. And Hassan, I'd like to begin by getting CARE's position on the president's statement regarding the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia. A remarkable statement the president issued yesterday with 7 or 8 exclamation points saying that there's no proof that the Saudi prince directed the murder of Khashoggi. He said maybe he did and maybe he didn't. And so this flies in the face of the CIA report showing conclusively that, in fact, it is likely that the Saudi prince ordered the killing of this man. Where is CARE on all of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a slap in the face to the CIA, to American intelligence. The CIA said very clearly that it appears the crown prince of Saudi Arabia directed the cold-blooded murder of an American journalist. I mean, he's essentially an American journalist. He's a U.S. resident. He was killed for engaging in journalism. He was killed for speaking truth to power, and the crown prince apparently saw fit to have him lured into an embassy, take advantage of the immunity that embassies have, and then have him killed in cold blood. And the president basically gave them the green light that this is acceptable, that, hey, as long as you're sending us money, you can do whatever the heck you want. And that's extremely disturbing. I mean, you have a U.S. president right now who openly calls the American press the enemy of the people, and then is essentially rewarding the cold-blooded murder of a journalist by, you know, a regime that he sees as a close ally to the U.S. And I think that undermines everything America stands for. I think that undermines our ideals and the principles of liberty and justice and democracy and freedom. Journalism and freedom of speech is essential to liberty. You cannot have democracy without a free, independent press. And it's clear that this president does not see a free, independent press as an enemy of the people. And apparently, the cold-blooded murder of a journalist is not enough for him to rethink his position on Saudi Arabia or take serious actions against those most directly responsible. And for him to simply just say such a childish statement, I mean, it was really a childish statement. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I mean, the CIA is saying he did. I can't say I'm surprised by his statement, but it is extremely disturbing. And one last point, I mean, I remember, you know, individuals like President Trump, they had serious problems with President Obama appearing to bend forward a little bit in front of the Saudis as they gave him a gift. And they said, look, he's showing weakness. He's showing disrespect by appearing to bow before the Saudi king. I mean, when I read the statement, it looked like President Trump was kissing their feet. He was essentially doing PR work for them. I mean, that was great publicity for them that I'm sure many in the Trump base, unfortunately, will believe word for word, and we are forgetting the horrific nature of the crime that's at stake and the position of the CIA on this crime.
It's 549-2937 to join us. So then what is the administration's goal in terms of not taking a stronger stand against Saudi Arabia? We're talking about everything from hoping the Saudis can help achieve an Israeli-Palestinian deal, rebuilding Syria, countering Iran. There's also the matter of weapons sales. At the same time, some members of Congress want an investigation into the Trump family's financial ties to the Saudi kingdom, whether it's apartments that have been sold to the Saudis, Saudi money that has poured into his real estate properties and hotels. There are so many factors, moving parts to this, Hassan. And so now that the House has flipped to the Democrats, how likely do you think it is that we will see an investigation into this matter? Because the killing of this journalist has, he's certainly not the first journalist in the past year to be killed somewhere in the world. But this is a particularly fraught matter. Because as you said, we are not seeing the United States of America defend a free press and more strongly condemn the brutal nature of his killing.
Right. And the truth of the matter is, if America in 2018 will not defend a free press, I'm afraid as to who will. And I think one of the most troubling issues, I remember that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia actually expressed shock. It was reported he expressed shock at the outrage at the killing of Khashoggi. And he actually pointed to crimes that the U.S. had engaged in, like what happened in Abu Ghraib prison and other historic crimes that, you know, the United States has made horrible mistakes in the past, and our leadership has done horrible mistakes in the past. But at the same time, we believe in a system of checks and balances. We believe in holding people accountable. And unfortunately, Saudi Arabia has used our past mistakes and even some of our current mistakes to justify what they did to Khashoggi. And my fear is now they don't even need to use the past. They just use the president's current support. And one has to question where the support is coming from. Is it really coming out of an interest in protecting U.S. interests? And what interests are greater than the principles of liberty and justice and democracy that are the essence of the U.S. Constitution that we all took an oath to uphold and protect? I really can't find any interests that are greater than that. Furthermore, as you pointed out, it's clear the Trump family, the president himself, Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and possibly many others, have a lot of business transactions and dealings with senior leadership from Saudi Arabia, with senior business leaders from Saudi Arabia. They were billionaire friends before Trump was president, and one has to wonder, and I think the American people have a right to know what those business interests are and how they're affecting his decisions.
And going beyond the current administration, let's be clear about the fact, too, that this is not the first president to be criticized for his dealings with the Saudis. We have pretty clear evidence that the Saudis were involved in 9/11, for example. Going all the way back to the first president, Bush 41. I clearly remember a book called House of Bush, House of Saud, that talked about the relationship between the Bush family and Saudi Arabia. And so Saudi Arabia, as a player in that region, is certainly a complicated ally for the United States. It's not an easy relationship to manage in any circumstance, Hassan. So before we go to the phone calls, could you provide a little historical context about that?
Look, I think the biggest issue is, and one of the things that we remember as one of the greatest mistakes in American foreign policy, is leaders of the United States, regardless of their political affiliation, have very often put very short-term interests above the greatest principles that we value and cherish, like freedom and liberty. And that is why you've had bipartisan support for countries like Saudi Arabia that have engaged in very troubling crimes, like the one we saw most recently, but have also supported Israel when it had also killed thousands of Palestinians in Gaza and in the occupied territories, and have engaged in crimes against humanity. And, I think that's a great example, because Saudi Arabia, claims to be representative of the Muslim people when it isn't, Israel claims to represent the Jewish people, and that's arguable in terms of the crimes it's committed against the Palestinian people. And yet you have presidents that support both countries, both of whom have committed disturbing crimes. And it shows that I think our commitment is not necessarily, regardless of political affiliation, has not been to human rights. And we really have to get over ourselves when we think that we are driven internationally by human rights and by principles. We're very much more often driven by immediate political interests. And I think we've sacrificed, both political parties have often sacrificed the greatest principles in pursuit of short-term gains. I think that's what we're seeing happening right now in Saudi Arabia. We've seen that happen with Israel. I think we've seen that with inaction against Syria, where the president there has killed over 500,000 people, or the dictator, I should say. And I think we really need to reassess what is driving our politics, what is driving our foreign policy. And we need to elect people, regardless of political affiliation, that will put the greatest principles of human rights and justice above these short-term, often financially driven interests.
Let's go to your calls now. As we talk about the president's statement on Saudi Arabia yesterday, what are your thoughts? 549-2937. Javon is in Tampa. Hey, Javon, good morning.
Good morning. I think your guest is right in that both parties have some onus in the fact that America has not always put its values ahead of making money. But what's happening with the Trump administration is not just about Saudi Arabia. It's that this administration is corrupt at a core level. With virtually everything that happens, there's always another deal or something that another shoe to drop. And at this point, it's time to impeach, vote out, and remove the Trump administration because it is eroding what is already a difficult situation. If America is going to survive, it has to get back to its core values, and it can't do that with a con man in chief.
Javon, thanks for that. You know, Hassan, it was remarkable to note yesterday, Republican members of Congress, particularly Lindsey Graham, who, of course, is a foreign policy hawk, criticizing the president without calling him out by name for a lack of moral leadership on this issue. And so the Wall Street Journal editorial page as well, a pretty conservative voice in the media landscape, also sharply critical of the president's lack of moral leadership and not standing up for American values. This incident, this killing, has really thrown into sharp relief, I think, where the administration stands when you talk about values like freedom of the press and how we deal with the Middle East. You know, It's really remarkable, and it's honestly difficult for me and other people, I think, in the media to talk about objectively, but we will try to do that because we have seen this spectacle of this mild-mannered journalist who was mildly critical of the Saudi regime in the Washington Post, killed in the most hideous fashion, and he was a U.S. resident. And that America would not stand up more strongly for him and for the value of the First Amendment and the importance of it, I think has been so alarming for so many, not just members of the press, but so many Americans. And so what about that caller's comment?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's onto something. What the problem is, we've seen normalization of a new level of authoritarianism coming out of the White House. We've seen a normalization of a new level of incivility. We've seen a normalization of a complete disrespect of our values and our principles enshrined in the Constitution. I, for one, really right now think one of the biggest threats, and I've felt this way for a while across generations, to an extent even under the Obama administration, I've always felt that the greatest threat to our liberty and our Constitution always comes from the executive branch. The executive branch, by its nature, always wants to assume more power and more authority. And we certainly saw that to an extent under the Obama administration. And we definitely saw that before under the Bush administration. The executive branch will always try to gain more authority. And that's why we have a Supreme Court. That's why we have Congress, to hold the one individual who ultimately runs the executive branch accountable to the rule of law, accountable to the democratic process, that we remind ourselves that our country is not about one individual. It is not about the president. The president is in the service of the people. He is not, the people are not in the service of the president. That's what makes America America. And I don't think Trump understands that. You know, I really think he thinks this is the Trump show. This is all about him. And it's about his greatness and his glory. And if you suck up to him, pardon my language, then he's going to treat you great. And if you have his financial interest with you, he's going to treat you great. And otherwise, he really treats you like an enemy, even if you're an American. I mean, I don't frequently watch Trump's speeches, but when I do, I'm shocked at how he speaks about as political opposition. He often bashes the Democrats, but we can't forget the Democrats are Americans. He's the president of the Republicans and of the Democrats and of every single American. He just doesn't have a voice that seems to care about unity, that seems to care about civility, that seems to care about justice, human rights, democracy, freedom, or liberty. He really does tend to favor authoritarians and dictators, and that's very scary. I mean, I remember his comments that maybe the U.S. will have a president for life someday. I don't think he gets what it means truly to be president of the United States, even now a couple of years into the job.
Tom in Jacksonville Beach. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. I'd like to speak about the point you just made about attempts at unbiasedness within the media, because it just seems that there's a lot of, particularly in left-leaning media, there's a lot of outrage presented at Donald Trump and even minor social faux pas. Do you think that has the effect of maybe watering down people's outrage when something truly outrageous like this murder and apparent acceptance of the murder occurs? And I'll take my response off there.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Tom. And okay, and I appreciate that question. So Hassan, what about that? The whole concept that people that might be more conservative leaning feel that the media just continually bashes Donald Trump over what they perceive to be smaller things. And so when something like this happens, they might tune out to the outrage and the shock of this because they don't perceive that the majority of media outlets are honest brokers in their criticism of this administration. What about that perception?
Well, look, the president is master at branding, right? I mean, he was in the show business for years. He's really done a very effective job coining the term fake news, or at least promoting it heavily and using it to his advantage. And, you know, it's definitely to a strong man's advantage that you don't trust the media and that you only trust him, even though, you know, the statistics have shown how many, you know, thousands of times he's lied and the percentage of lies that he speaks. But unfortunately, because he's branded that fake news message so strong, it's really people who defer to authoritarianism, a lot of his supporters, now they're very reluctant to trust the media when it criticizes him, when it points out that the grave injustice he's done. I do think the media's done a disservice in terms of focusing on relatively minor personal things as opposed to serious issues. But that certainly happened with Obama as well. I mean, I remember the circus that went on when Obama wore a tan suit to a press conference. And I think people have to recognize that when you have the president of the office,
that was treated as a scandal.
That was treated as a scandal. Literally, that was, I missed the days when that was the biggest scandal, you know. So the point is, when you have the president in the office, I think people, regardless of political affiliation, have to recognize, you know, it's going to come with great scrutiny. But people need to do their own independent research and study. And I don't think anybody who does that can come to any conclusion other than that, Trump is a dangerous man. I really think so. And I can't believe it's come to that. But the president of the United States poses a risk. And I think one of the greatest risks, I mean, was highlighted yesterday when he's willing to essentially do free PR work for a country that essentially its crown prince has lured a journalist into an embassy and killed him in cold blood, completely contrary to all of our current political norms.
We just had an election. We saw the checks and balances of our political system work. The House has now gone Democratic. A large percentage of people who came out to vote, and it was a very high turnout, said that they were voting Democratic as a check on this president. That included some Republicans. And so what would you say to those who might disagree with you and say, well, perhaps this president is extreme, but we are seeing our system of government work to rein in an executive that is overreaching and is not perhaps performing in the way that we would like?
You know, that's all we have hope in, right? It is our democratic institutions. So, yes, I certainly hope that is the case. But I do fear we've reached a new low. You know, one of my good friends, a conservative Republican and even a Trump supporter, to my disappointment, and I'll be very frank on that. You know, he said, as in the pendulum, you know, swings, but I think it'll always eventually over the years just sort of balance out in the middle. And I actually told him, I said, what I'm afraid of, it's going to swing so wide that it's going to get loose and become a wrecking ball that just flies off. And that's a possibility. I mean, if we reach this level right now in our current political discourse and our actions, God knows what the next election may bring out and the one after that. But I certainly have hope in the American people, in my fellow Americans, that cooler heads will prevail. I do think it was important, regardless of which party it was, that a party that is willing to challenge the president gain more authority. You mentioned some prominent Republicans that have criticized some of the positions taken by the president, but they never truly held him accountable. I think we've seen on both sides people putting preference to their political party and their political party's success. And this, we've seen this on both sides, above, you know, the principles and the values. People do this all the time. They put superficial things above principles of liberty and justice, and that's disturbing. So it was refreshing to see at least some checks on the executive branch be elected into office. We also, I think, it was extremely inspiring to see America's first Yemeni Somali, she's both Somali and Yemeni refugee, a Muslim hijab-wearing woman elected to Congress. I mean, that's huge. President Trump essentially wanted a ban on Muslims from coming into America. He certainly wanted to ban refugees. He wanted to ban Yemenis and Somalis. And so America responded by sending the first such person to Congress. That was very powerful. Rashida Tlaib, but also a Palestinian-American woman sent to Congress. So we're seeing more diverse voices enter Congress that better represent the American people. And there's great hope that that can be a check and restore some of the principles of liberty that I feel have been getting eroded over the last couple of years. And honestly, much before that, I mean, since really 9/11, we've seen a tremendous threat against our liberty in the United States in the name of national security. And was, as one of our founding fathers said, those who sacrifice some liberty for some security in the end deserve or obtain neither.
Let's go to Lisa in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Lisa. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. Y'all have covered a couple of things, but just want to underscore how truly horrific this, we're referring to as PR. The fact that the president amplified the dog whistle of the Saudi, you know, claims of you know, not being involved in this, and threw into his statement references to the Muslim Brotherhood and whatever the other entity that he put in, which is really disingenuous and not true, and that he, like, is furthering, you know, their message, which you kind of touched on. When you think about this in comparison to how he treated our traditional allies at the armistice ceremony and disrespected, disregarded them, but he's pandering so very deeply to this despot who is brutal and is, you know, he's furthering his message for him. That's just astounding, and it cannot be stressed hard enough.
Thanks, Lisa. Lots of, and thanks for your thoughts on that. Let's go to a few more calls and then we'll go back to Hassan. Catherine in St. John's. Hi, Catherine. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just not believing what I'm hearing anymore. It's almost like I feel like I'm in a bizarro world. Where is the outrage of the American people when we hear values coming from our president that don't reflect American ideals? I just feel like the America we're living in now with people that are so brainwashed is so akin to something like Nazi Germany. I honestly sometimes wake up and don't know where I'm living anymore. I really don't. And that's all I have to say.
Catherine, thanks. We've got to keep believing in America, don't we? We got to keep believing in America. Lee in San Marco. Lee, go ahead.
Good morning. I generally agree with your guest's comments on the position that the president has taken. However, I do have one strong objection, and that is with his comparison to the relationship between the United States and Israel and the United States and Saudi Arabia. Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and its actions against the people in Gaza as a result of the Hamas movement gaining ascendancy there, and their constant attacks with rockets over that southern border. And there's just no comparison with the egregious actions of the Saudi government. I believe that the alliance between the United States and Israel is one that certainly is in favor or in strength. strong support of the United States' interests in that area of the world.
I take your point there, Lee. Thanks for those points. And let's go now to Jesse at Jacksonville Beach. Go ahead, Jesse.
Hey, how are you? I just wanted to draw a comparison between this slang of Khashoggi and Daniel Pearl in 2002 in Pakistan. Granted, Daniel Pearl was killed by terrorists, but the way that that was handled is the people who executed him were brought to justice and arrested, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And, you know, I just, it feels like lost in all this outside of Trump saying stupid things, which is, you know, kind of an everyday thing. I think we all agree. What are the real things that we can do to, you know, rectify this or bring some justice, level of justice to this man and his family?
Yeah. Thanks, Jesse. Hassan.
Yeah. No, a lot of great points from all your callers. As to the last point, I think what can be done is, I think it's very clear that a lot of these issues are coming directly from the Crown Prince. Since the Crown Prince gained authority, we've seen a lot of troubling changes in Saudi Arabia, making it a less free place. And one of the first things he did was lock up, you know, hundreds of other princes and business leaders under the guise of, trying to rat out corruption. And in the end, basically blackmailed them all to give up significant portions of their wealth. He's done a couple progressive things, like allowing them to drive, which is overdue, but then just does so much backhanded, disturbing the things that have promoted a lot of instability in the region. So I think it's clear we need to work with experts, true experts, academic experts, political experts, and our allies across the world into the Middle East, and most likely follow their recommendation, which probably is that somebody like MBS should not be in power. Now, I have trouble, you know, with the idea that the U.S. should dictate who runs other countries. But I think there's significant support within Saudi Arabia for somebody like MBS not to be the crown prince, not to be the leader. And when we send messages that, you know what, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but we don't care, that actually sends the wrong message to Saudi Arabia. I think we should rather, at the very least, send a very strong message that the U.S. cannot work with individuals that take such action. And furthermore, we need to also reform our actions. You know, we shouldn't have had instances like Abu Ghraib that Saudi Arabia can point as an example of why what they're doing is okay. So we need to make sure we don't repeat such mistakes. I also very quickly want to comment on the previous caller in regards to Israel. I think that's the exact issue, is that people, look, I'm a proud Muslim. I just performed the Hajj in Saudi Arabia. I love Islam. I love Mecca. I love Medina. But I would never let that blind me from seeing the criminal activity that the Saudi Arabian government has done. And I would also call on many of our brothers and sisters who have a love and affiliation, affection for Israel, not to turn a blind eye to what the crimes of the current political party that have done against the American people. Yeah, Israel is the only democracy if you just ignore the millions of disenfranchised Palestinians unable to vote.
And I get you there, Hassan. I get you there, but I think his point was more saying, is it fair to conflate the two players? A despotic regime with no human rights, no rule of law, and Israel, which is imperfect, but at least tries to achieve some of the norms of democracy.
No, times are changing. I think it's unfair. Let me be real. Maybe it's unfair to Saudi Arabia. I mean, Israel has killed countless more civilians than the Saudi Arabian government has, including one of my own Tampa clients, a cousin, including, talk about there, a Tampa Palestinian teenager who was beaten by Israeli police unconscious on video camera, including many journalists that are Palestinian. You know, so I don't think it's really, and times are changing. Before, it used to be taboo to compare Israel to Saudi Arabia, but let's be real here. Times are changing, and I think as facts come out and people learn, they will see that, you know, there's very little difference.
And let me just take one more call before we wrap this up. Edwin in Bartram Park. Hi, Edwin. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a point, an observation there, that the lady that was mentioned early on, who's a brand new congressman from Minnesota, if I believe, I will thank the people from Minnesota for voting this lady into Congress. But as for America voting her in, that's not quite. I'm here in the South. People are a bit different than people from the North or the West. All this talk about Trump and they should do this and this administration should do that. The U.S. government does things, but we're not going to see any of the things that we hope they're going to be, should be happening anytime soon, anytime for the next 2 years at least, not until we get other people in Congress and other people in the White House. A lot of wishful thinking and hopes can be thrown out there. They should do this, so I demand them to do that. But if you're not in any of those positions or of power, yes, nothing's really going to happen. Anything comes down to a vote, an election, picking the right people. Hopefully your candidate makes it in who has the best values. But as of right now, we don't have anything quite like that.
Okay.
In the White House or even in the Senate.
Thanks, Edwin.
It's not been like that for a while.
Thanks, Edwin. Thanks for that. Okay. Hassan, your final thoughts we await a potential investigation into all of this.
That's a great point to end this conversation with, and I want to thank the last caller. The truth of the matter is this, as you mentioned, you know, right now an opposition party, the Democrats, have taken over the Congress. And I think that while they don't control both the House and the Senate, at least with control of the House, they can use that to put a form of check on the president to engage in investigations and hopefully shed more light for the American people to make better informed decisions moving forward. I think they need to be careful how they use that. I also think it's critical everyone is able to speak to people that they disagree with politically, because if we just get into every person listening to the echo chamber and putting sort of loyalty to party and loyalty to the people they respect as their role models, instead of loyalty to facts and truth, we're headed in a wrong direction. I also think it is the biggest problem America faces. One of the biggest problems is political apathy and lack of voting. The elections are super, super close. I remember in Florida right now, our elections have been won by less, and some of the elections have been won by less than 0.2%. So not even 1%, but 0.2%, which means each and every vote counts. So if nothing else, I urge every listener, regardless of political affiliation, make sure you and your family and your friends are registered to vote and get out and vote. Because if those who care are not voting, we may be electing people who really don't care about us at the end of the day.
Hassan Shibley, Chief Executive Director of CARE Florida, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And much more still ahead later. Some holiday music to start the season off right. But up next, the Florida legislature swearing in new leaders, including some from this area. We'll be right back.
Cancer Specialists of North Florida. Their team of experts provide compassionate, patient-focused treatment and cutting-edge technology at 8 convenient offices across North Florida. Cancer doesn't care. We do.
Serve Pro of Jacksonville South and Arlington are proud to support the J.T. Townsend Foundation, helping children and adults living with disabilities on the First Coast. Learn more or donate at jttownsendfoundation.org.
Coker Law wants you to know that Thanksgiving is the number one day for kitchen fires and reminds you that neither your oven temperature or your family dinner conversations should get overheated. More family-friendly holiday safety tips at CokerLaw.com.
Welcome back. The Florida legislature convened in Tallahassee before the Thanksgiving holiday for an organizational session. Gina Jordan reports new lawmakers were sworn in and new leaders installed, including some from this area. Take a listen.
With new and outgoing state leaders looking on, Chief Justice Charles Kennedy administered the oath of office to senators in groups of five.
And repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Aaron V. Gibson.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear.
Bradenton Senator Bill Galvano was nominated unopposed to be the 88th Florida Senate President. Galvano was elected to the chamber in 2012. He previously served in the Florida House. In seconding his nomination, Fort Myers Senator Lizbeth Beniquisto referred to Galvano's Sicilian heritage.
I'll start with three quotes from the Corleones of The Godfather that immediately come to mind when we think of you. Don't ever take sides against the family. Ever. You'll make him an offer he can't refuse, and never let anyone know what you're thinking. Now, those may seem funny to share in a nomination speech, but take note, my friends. They may be quite instructive over the next 2 years.
The Senate's approval was unanimous, as announced by outgoing President Joe Negron.
Senators, it is now my great honor to present the gavel to Senator Bill Galvano, President of the Florida Senate for the 2018 through 2020 term.
Galvano asked for civility and decorum in the Senate's interactions with fellow lawmakers and constituents.
As Senate President, I have very little ability to change the national discourse or to stem the tide of modern-day incivility that is so pervasive in an era of social media and 24-hour news cycle. But I can tell you, as Senate President, and while I'm Senate President, that the Florida Senate will have civility, transparency, candor, and provide opportunity, including opportunity for the people of Florida to be heard by this body.
Longwood Senator David Simmons was elected as President pro tem, and Jacksonville Senator Audrey Gibson was chosen to lead the Senate Democratic Caucus. New members of the Florida House were also sworn in, and outgoing House Speaker Richard Corcoran announced his replacement.
By your vote, ladies and gentlemen, you have elected Representative Jose Oliva, Speaker of the Florida House of Representatives.
Hialeah Representative Jose Oliva said the chamber would work to protect the environment, care for vulnerable citizens, and provide for building and maintaining public infrastructure.
And so, members, our work begins. In this chamber, the people's chosen representatives will debate the way forward. Let us remember to honor and respect this institution and one another. And let our debate always lean on the strength of our argument rather than on the volume of our voices.
Martin County Representative Mary Lynn Magar was elected Speaker pro tem. Cape Coral Representative Dane Eagle was chosen as Republican Majority Leader. And Central Miami-Dade County Representative Keone McGee was elected to lead the House Democratic Caucus. The regular session of the legislature convenes March 5th. I'm Gina Jordan in Tallahassee.
Well, she's an award-winning celebrity chef with local roots who lost everything in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. But now, Chef Erica Klein is back with a new concept. She has opened up Blue Chocolat, a new cafe in historic Springfield. And I, for one, am really excited about it. Erica Klein, good morning. Great to have you back on the show.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. And it's so good to see you. Now, your fans around town first knew of you when you went on Bravo Top Chef's Just Dessert and got a national platform. You were working as a pastry chef at the Ponte Vedra Inn and Club at that time and got tapped to be on national TV. And I did not realize that from there, you went down to British Virgin Islands and had a restaurant space down there.
Yeah, well, it kind of is funny. It's a cute little story. I left Jacksonville and went down to the Bahamas. Uh-huh. I went to Nashville, Nassau, and opened up Great Cliff Chocolatier for Great Cliff Hotel. And then a couple of years later, I met my husband, mm-hmm. who is also a chef in Tortola, British Virgin Islands. And so we opened Blue Chocolat down there, and also Deluxe Mongoose, which is a beachfront restaurant and resort.
So everything's going great, and then Hurricane Irma comes through.
Wiped us clean out.
Wow.
Yeah,
nothing
but it's
left.
Okay.
You didn't sit around and cry.
Oh, I did. I did.
You did.
You know, reality. And my husband, he just kind of gave me a little shook and said, "Okay, let's figure this out." And one of my closest sister chefs is Linda Evans, and he's like, "Won't you go back to Jacksonville and I trust you to be up that way and be with your sister and make it happen." And then we also met up with Tanisha Guy, who was the former baker of Oh gosh,
it doesn't matter.
Soul Food Bistro.
Soul Food Bistro. Oh,
yes,
sure.
Yes. Yes.
Well, so you came back to town, and I'm so glad you did, because you have opened Blue Chocolat.
We did.
In Springfield, at the intersection of Walnut and 6th Street, the old Three Layers Cafe spot. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what's known as a bean to bar cafe. Desserts, coffee, tapas, and chocolate.
Yes.
What could be better than that? Yes.
And beer and wine. We got that wine that kicks in there. Yeah.
I can't wait to go. So what all is on the menu?
So we have a small bite menu, which is fun. And we call it Southern plus Caribbean equals Blue Chocolat. So we have our Southern collard green spring rolls with our grandma's cha-cha. We have our Jamaican beef patties, which are, we can't keep them. And, you know, we're fresh rolling them out and popping them in the oven, and we have our honey sea salt potato wedges. I mean, everything is like really good. And one of our specialties is pigtails. So we have our brown sugar rum pigtails. Tastes exactly like pork belly, served with fresh Johnny cakes.
You've got a great menu, and you've got a great location.
Yes, we do.
Right there on Walnut Street in Springfield.
Yeah.
When the Three Layers Cafe there closed, I think people were really sad. So it's so exciting to see this space activated again by a chef as talented as you.
Oh, thank you. I just want to give a shout out to Springfield, the community. They have been so loving and kind. They've wrapped their arms around us and made it happen for us over the last 9 days of being open.
Only 9 days.
9 days.
So this has sort of been a soft opening, right?
This is our soft
word
opening.
Word of mouth.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so we got to get the word out.
Yeah.
So Blue Chocolat is open Tuesday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. On Sunday, 8 to 5. Wait a minute. I'm reading this press release. It says here at the end, Gospel Brunch is coming soon.
Coming soon in January.
What are you going to have for that?
So it's the last Sunday of every month, starting in 2019. And we'll have a gospel choir just rocking.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And then a nice brunch to go along with it.
What are you going to serve for brunch?
Anything that makes us happy. That's how I don't want to like limit ourselves, you know? And I was talking to a lady yesterday, and I was just like, I just want our food to touch your soul. And that's what Gospel Brunch is going to be about.
I am definitely going. You know, I can almost walk. Well, I could walk there. It'd be a little bit of a long walk.
Can't wait to see you.
I can't wait to come and bring my daughters. And they are open now, Blue Chocolat. And by the way, I'm sure that Erica could hook you up with some chocolate gifts for the holidays.
Yes.
And all of that good stuff. 1602 Walnut Street, the corner of 6th and Walnut, at the site of the former Three Layers Cafe. Celebrity chef Erica Klein back in town with Blue Chocolat, and just in time for the holidays. So kudos. I'm so excited for you, Erica.
Thank you.
And thanks for the treats you brought, by the way, too.
Oh, my pleasure.
Everyone here in the newsroom thanks you for that. Okay. And in a moment, some live holiday music from Jacksonville musician Aaron Brask. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Rami Malek, he plays Freddie Mercury in the new film Bohemian Rhapsody. He also stars in the TV series Mr. Robot as a withdrawn hacker. I hope you'll join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
We will rock you.
At-home DNA tests might be a popular gift this season, but are people really comfortable giving up such personal data?
It's kind of the nature of the beast, right? It's like there's one step, and then next thing you know, the doors just flood open, and everybody wants to do something. But I think I'm going to just continue to be myself.
I'm Molly Wood. When DNA becomes company data, what does that mean for you? That's next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Next time on The World, a nation divided over the dinner table.
I went back to Thanksgiving last year, and I am about to this year, and it will probably be the same.
We checked in with listeners whose relatives hold strong political views.
We all just try and not say anything in order to keep the peace.
But other folks tell us that this year, the table talk might be different. We listen on The World this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Millions of Americans will think nothing of hitting the road this Thanksgiving, but a new movie centers on a guide that helped black travelers stay safe in the Jim Crow South. Green Book centers on the friendship between a white bouncer from the Bronx and a world-class black pianist. The Movie Club reviews Green Book, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it'll be some holiday magic in the San Marcos Square this weekend as JSO hornist Aaron Brask presents his annual Music for the Holiday Season concert. We're listening to some of it right now. He joins us now in studio. Hey, Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for being here. Now, this is a concert you've done every Christmas season in the San Marcos Square. You're going to be doing this at South Jacksonville Presbyterian Church. It sounds so great. How did this whole tradition get started?
A long time ago, I made a Christmas record. People heard the record and said, wow, can you play some of that live? And I talked to my friend Bill. Bill was a composer orchestrator in Los Angeles for 17 years, and he lives in this area. And we got to talking about writing out some stuff for some of our friends. Our friends happen to be experts. This is a splinter group. This is not really anything to do with the Boston Symphony or the Jacksonville Symphony.
This is just a fun thing you do.
Right.
And this is a free concert, by the way.
Yes. And now, it's really free, as in we don't close the door and pass the hat later.
Yeah. This is just something for the community to enjoy. Now, you're a hornist with the JSO. You're an incredible player, incredible musician. But you're bringing in all your friends who are great musicians, too. Isn't that right?
Oh, that's the idea. You get a band that plays better than you and follow them. That's the best way to do it. So we have people that have played with, for you jazz aficionados out there, people who have played with Maria Schneider, Ray Charles, Pat Metheny, people who like something a little heavier than that, people who used to play with groups like Skid Row. I can tell you that many of the players in town know these players, because they're the people that are hard to get a hold of when you're trying to contact them for engagements. The reason we do this concert the Sunday after Thanksgiving is because it's the only day when nobody's working.
That's right. Everybody's hanging out, enjoying the long weekend.
Right. Everyone's had their fill of turkey and they want to do something for fun. And that's how I'm able to say, well, you can come over to the church and play these things that Bill and I arranged. Bill Boston wrote orchestrations for things like Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3, Mimic, Relic.
Wow.
You know, and
pretty
so
impressive
on.
Resume.
He was an orchestrator and contributed a lot to these big projects. And so imagine what it's like to sit down with someone like that and you say, okay, we have 9 players. What do we do? Well, we can do this. And things just happen. And then when you have the good players, we have one rehearsal for this show right before the show, they breathe life into it. After one pass, you just play through it and go, wow, it sounds great. Let's turn it over, next one. There's nothing like playing in a group like that. It's just a
everyone's
thrill.
At the top of their game.
Yeah.
And it's just magical.
And yeah. It's a reunion. A lot of us know each other, but we work in different parts of the business. And we're like, man, what have you been doing for the last 6 months? And we get caught up over dinner.
Now, you are a member not only of the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra, but the Glimmerglass Festival, a former member of the Florida Orchestra. You've toured the world playing music. You teach at JU and FSCJ, by the way. You teach music to students. So that's something people need to know about you. The Aaron's website is lasthorn.com. And so with all of that said, it's music for the holiday season. Coming up 5 p.m. Sunday, this Sunday, at South Jacksonville Presbyterian Church. They are right at the southern tip of the San Marcos Square at 2137 Hendricks Avenue. This is free, so don't miss this opportunity to enjoy some amazing musicians at the top of their game. World-class musicians performing a free concert Sunday in Jacksonville in San Marco. They do this every year, and such a wonderful tradition that they do. Aaron Brask, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for being here. What are we listening to right now? This is a little more of your music.
Oh, this is Charlie Brown theme. I don't know if we're going to play that in the thing or not.
Are you going to play that Sunday?
We might. It depends on what's in the book. I have to review that. It's.
I think people would love it if you did.
Yeah, the thing that happens is these players kind of shock the audience. People come in and think it's going to be like the annual Christmas pageant, and they're hoping that their son Bernie doesn't drop the candle in the middle of the show. We don't have that kind of a show. People come in always and say, they live here, you got to be kidding me.
Right, you're that good.
Yeah, and it's a really big deal to get everyone in the same room.
That's right. So don't miss the opportunity to come out to Music for the Holiday Season, Sunday, 5 o'clock. Free concert at the South Jacksonville Presbyterian Church. Aaron Brask, thanks so much.
Thank you. The pleasure was mine.
We'll listen to some more of the music. 1A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross. And have a wonderful, safe, and happy Thanksgiving weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.